Okay. Can you tell about your mother's family?
Yes. My mother also, they were also two girls and two boys that grew up to be older. Of course, I must repeat again, all those families lost lots of children in babyhood. If they raised 6 or 4, that was a lot out of 10, maybe 12. I had one uncle that had a baby and his wife every year, and sometimes two. They had 18 children, and I used to be invited, and I never saw such a well-regulated house in my life. They had all shelves and their space. They all had to put their washed cup and their napkin and their plate and their fork and a knife away again, and there was this. They sat around the table by age, and then the older ones, when I went away from home, the one daughter was as old as I am. She was in my class, and she had to take care, wash all the diapers, and the older ones brought up the little ones while the mother was getting the baby. They used to make fun of that Uncle John. Johann was his name, a nice family. That always around Christmas he had to go to his sister's house and wish her Happy New Year and say a little something to it. Invited her coming because the baby was coming every year. They made jokes upon themselves like that. And my mother's sister got married to a man that had what we have here now is parcel post. They had it with horses. They brought things around from other cities, and he had about 7 horses, and he had hired men that went to different cities. It was a regular business, and that's how we got so many treats, carriage rides and sleigh rides, because on holidays they couldn't leave those horses stand in the stable. They had to let them run, and my brother, he got very familiar with horses. I was more or less afraid of them. But they had that business. And then my other uncle, the one uncle was sent from Adi Farben, was the name of the chemical factory that sent him over to New York. And his brother was the one that stayed with the military and then got a job through the government all his life. And he's gone. They're all gone now. Because you know how old I am, they would be over 100 years old if they were alive. And so there were 4 in either family, and each one of my grandmothers were widowed real young. The men had to work so hard, awful hard, and then it's a hard climate too. And my one grandfather died with what they used to call here in this country Bright's disease. I said, a collection of water. Now they don't, they call everything cancer nowadays. And my other grandfather, I was too young, I hardly know what he died of. And, you know, there were so many saying the same names in a town, so we all had funny names. My mother's name, maiden name was Musner. M-O-E-S-S-N-E-R, and the word means a deacon of the church. And so there were so many, so they all had a funny name, and they usually get insulted if you, my one side of the Muslims were called the Schnapps Muslims, because that grandpa made whiskey, burned it, you know, from his grapes and stuff he had. And the other was called, and they got very mad. My stepmother's name was Mosner too, and they were called the Kohlrabi Mosners because they had fields and fields of kohlrabi that they used to feed the animals, kohlrabi. And so everyone had a name. Only my father came from further away, and that name was Sperr, S-P-R-R-R. That was a rare name. And I suspect, I don't know, all my relatives I knew were Christians, but I suspect that he came from a Jewish family that came wandering in and established himself there and then married that grandmother. But I have no foundation for it, but just because there was an uncle, a great uncle, that had the store in that town where he was born. And the Jewish people that came from Germany that were in agriculture, they took over the businesses. They were all, and later on they were all the lawyers and the doctors, because they studied, you know, they made it, they'd rather live in the basement than get an education. For the average German or the average European, it's not easy to get from one caste to another. For instance, if you're born a worker's son, even if he would have the money to study, he wouldn't be so readily accepted. They may have such caste system. And they're worse in France. You even have glasses in the streetcar, so the poor don't have to come near the rich. That was funny. They didn't have that in Germany when I lived in France and Paris, and you had to pay more if you said that portion of, you know that maybe, yeah. It's all over like that. And when you're away, especially if you go to America, England, there are caste there too, and stations in life that they recognize. But when you live here long, and it's seemingly they have their way of staying by themselves too, but they don't do it so openly. They just make their club so expensive that no poor person can enter. Well, so when I came back from America, I thought that was so funny. Everything was classified, and the titles you had to use. And if you had a business, you have to always, if he's a doctor, you have to say to her, Frau Doktor. Hitler did away with that. They don't carry the titles anymore for the females. And if he's a veterinary, veterinärsrat, a title that long. And when you're young, when we had the restaurant, we had people like that coming, you had to, you couldn't say Mr. So-and-so their title, and I could not even pronounce them. They were that long. You know some German, don't you? So you know how long their sentences and their words can be. Oh boy, America is much simpler. I used to laugh at the people that came over here and mixed it all up. There's a book in print here, or was, and it's called Die Schönste Language. And it's all the way these Germans talk. Two words English, one German, and so on. It's the funniest thing. You know the poem from Faust. You know that poem by Schiller? Faust? That's the opera and all. You've got the music here in this country.
S-A-U-S.
You know the story.
Yeah.
Well, in that book, they have that all in this Schönste Language, in this mix-up. And I used to have to tell that at gatherings and in clubs. It's so funny. People laugh like anything. I hear that greenhorn talk English, you know. I loaned it to somebody, and this big Faust story is all in that language.
Okay. Is there anything else? Oh, by the time you came along, though, everybody in your family was Lutheran.
Oh yes, I had no relatives that was anything else but Lutheran. You see, when you have so many relatives, when another generation back, you hardly know each other. You begin to say see to them. I couldn't get over that when I got back. It was an and one generation removed. But I had to title her and say see, not do. To your family you say do, and to very close friends. And out there they're so form filled, I might say, and you have to abide by it. And all that makes you not want to stay. I don't know many Germans that if they were here halfway long, they would stay over there. Even now, where you see they have so much better social law, they get more to retire, and they get all the doctors free. And so some of my friends that were here maybe 30, 35 years, they're better off by going out there because they have so much free, and they can still get their Social Security check. I have a few like that, but oh, she sent a letter this morning. From one, is she unhappy that she didn't, she's so sorry that she didn't stay here, not too late to come back. She passed 90. And she had a lot of operations, eye operations, and she got them free out there. That's why she went. But you know, to put up with those harsh winters when you get that old and your friends go and die, the older you get, the more lonesome. She'd give anything. She was back in San Francisco. That's where she lived so long. Then her husband died, and then they do that sometimes. When I was out there visiting, they would say to me, why don't you stay here? You got the money, and it's so nice here. I said, oh, no, I wouldn't stay in Germany. Not if you paid me, and I couldn't explain why. And they, it's something you're feeling. My niece, my closest relative, my brother's daughter, she has three children of her own, and she's well off. Her husband is an architect. He built high-rise. Right now they're not so well off because it collapsed. Nobody's buying those expensive apartments. They are so much more than here. And she's gotten rather stylish. She's a new, I call her a newly rich. It went to her head, she's not at. And she thinks she has the last thing in style. She goes to fashionable places, even to Paris, to buy her stuff because it's only a little flight to go to Paris from Stuttgart. Well, it never, never has the certain grace and the certain style that our clothes have. And ours may be cheap, but they just appear heavy. And the lightness is gone. The French, of course, if they can afford a good coat, they're well dressed. They have it. But the Germans are awkward, awkward, and their whole life is so awkward, you know. If you don't know it if you're not away, and what makes me so angry with my niece, she doesn't know America at all except what she read or what she heard. And she would argue with me, oh, that's much better here in Germany. I, toward the end, I said, oh, that's what you think, because you haven't seen anything else. So, you know, we had a friendly argument. And since her daughter's been here, she's got a very gifted daughter in music. She's plays in concerts, piano. And her older daughter, that's married, she's a teacher. And the boy is going to be a lawyer. He's in school yet, so they're all fairly educated, and they can go to England and to France and to Italy. They've been to all those short places, but he invited the piano player over here. Sunny is her name. She's a young, slender, full of athletic movements, and she skis, and she everything. But when she was here long enough to see how my people lived, and she was to parties, and she was to school for the children here in Oxnard, and she changed her opinion, you see. She usually have, when you're opinionated, it's so terrible, it's usually half of it is ignorance, I think, myself included.
Are you going to tell about your stepmother's family?
Oh, yes, my stepmother's family. She had a sister that was a midwife, and she was a very good midwife because she got the title that the king accredits with her title of her being a midwife. That means not all of them can get it, but they have to have a certain success, be outstanding. Well, and she was very busy in this town where we were, and they had no phones yet, people, so they... She had a great big bell in her apartment, and always at all times somebody had to be there. Now, she had a maid, but she had a girl staying with her, but she had to get off too once in a while, and then it was my job to go and wait for the calls, because very often she couldn't even come home. She'd have to go right to the next house, and I don't know how she did it. they did it. They had no cars to get around. She had a bicycle, and so we in school now, we were at that point where we got curious where children came from, and the whole business, and we would, you know, we'd be a clique and talk about it and wondered, and I was always a smart aleck, so one day I came to school and said that I discovered now how to go about a Jamaican child, and I said, we have one of those enamel pots hanging behind the bedroom, and you, if you look, have it too, and they have it covered up with something all the time. And I saw my father taking that in the bedroom several times already, and I watched last night. I looked through the keyhole, and they pumped something out of that pot into the mama's belly, and that's what makes that baby grow. And I said, next time I'm at my aunt's, Caroline, I'm going to see what she has in those baskets. She had always a couple because they had to be still. And so this next time I went there, I put cloth on the floor. Everything was in gauze or in still, and laid it all on the floor. And when the spell rang, I got so scared I put it back quick and didn't get it the way it should have been. Took the basket down instead of taking the untouched one and ran to that house, and because you had to have another basket for every house. And boy, when she came home, did she knock me around and scold me. She said, that woman could die because you did that, because I couldn't figure out why. She said, that's all sterilized. And when she was over being so mad, I said, why do you have scissors and all that in there? You're not going to cut that baby loose? She says, yes, somewhere we cut it, but that's none of your business. You know, they could have told us so easy. Well, then I went back and told them that again. And I was the big somebody. I knew all about the babies, and they did now too. And we would, boy, I don't know how we could stay so dumb. We saw the mothers getting big, and we knew they were carrying a baby. But the thing was, how did he get out, and how did he get in? And they, about sex education, that the parents should have looked out for, was unheard of in those. I never in all my life saw my father and mother even giving each other a kiss, or using any cozy names or something. And they were so different. They treated that just like it was something you had to be ashamed of, and like it was, and here there wouldn't be no world without it. It was created like everything else. It's got such a wrong slant put on it by people. So now I'm glad you don't stand for it anymore. I'm glad, but I think that they go a little bit too extreme. What I don't like as a woman is the way it gets put over. Now, I don't mean in school, but otherwise the value that's put on over it, and I think that it's too sacred to me to have it talked in a funny way. That's my kids, they're grown up and some married, they wouldn't tell a dirty joke before me. They know what my idea is. They do them maybe among themselves, but not. Well, that was that end. She had one daughter, Emma. She married the doctor, and that's, and she, you know, right from the beginning when the people situated, say my mother's, my sister, wasn't put in a private school, but that midwife sister, she could afford it, was put in a private school, and she married a doctor, she married, so they're separated, regardless if they're cousins, they're separated socially, they go with different people, and that's what I think is so, it's not right, you know, in one family. That's what Grandma always taught it in front of God, there is no difference. All people are alike, except if you steal a lie or you're dirty, then you're not right. Otherwise, you're a person, and you can learn things and do things. Now,
you're your stepmother had a sister who was a midwife, another sister who married a doctor.
No, her deputy's daughter married a doctor.
Oh.
But she had another sister, Molly. There were four girls, and there were six. No, there were 11 children altogether. But I have to laugh because they had such a strict father. He made my stepmother so unhappy and spoiled her whole life by being so strict. She got engaged. She fell in love with a young man. And he was all right, I mean, socially acceptable to them. A week before the wedding, and in Germany, they hang the couple outside so the people of the town, if they want to go to the wedding, they can, just the church. And 2 weeks before, they hung out, and they announced on Sundays in church that that couple is going. And that was all done, and she had her dress and everything. And her father went over to one of these restaurants where men go on a Saturday night to talk politics. And the tailor was there that made his future son-in-law's suit. And that tailor said to him in front of everybody, "Remind your future son-in-law, he owes me still 5 mark on the suit." And he was so insulted because, you know, that was an insult to his family. And he went home and broke up that marriage. She couldn't marry him. And that left her. And then she met my father despite her people. And that's why she was so unhappy and was acting so unhappy. That was the cruelest thing that you could think of. Because I heard it say in the restroom, my father was around to some people, that if she had a chance to run away with her, with the man she was going to marry, she would still do it, and she was married then maybe a year or two. So that shows how unhappy she was. But they lived, my father died when he was close to 90, and she got to be 82. She died a little younger, but they stayed together all the time. Built houses, you know, my father's old house I got. That's still standing there, still rented. There's 4 people in it. They turned it into apartments. And he built a brand new house just before Hitler got in power. And when this war came, the Hitler war, it took the roof off. And they were down in the basement one night, and the people came and yelled, "Come up, your house is on fire, come up." Then the people tried to put it out, and they did, and he rebuilt that roof and all. But most of the houses in that part of Stuttgart were bombed, you know. Well, what that crazy fool did to the people, they were so mad at them. And my father, though, was smart enough. He had learned something from the First World War. He went into debt at the beginning, bought land, and he paid what he could, and paid it off. Later on, when the money wasn't worth anymore, so he was. They weren't poor. They were well off. My people. I mean, not rich, but well off. And so, and my brother became a flyer. My brother, my father's son, and he was shot down 3 times, and so he lost his legs and part of his face and all. But he was alive, and he got 74 years old and got married, and his niece is his daughter. Still, you know, build a life out of the pieces. But my mother's stepmother's brothers all, well, they all got jobs, you know, government jobs. But one of them, they had their vineyard next to each other, and in each vineyard there was a little house that you, if it rained or something, you could go in. And so there was a girl a year younger than he in the next, their neighbor in the vineyards that's out of town. And it rained, and them two got better acquainted and became sweethearts. And she got pregnant, and then at night those days she didn't need papers to get to America. And somehow they had a connection. They had to send him quick to America before the old man found it out, he would have killed him. You know, they were just so infested with honor, I call it, silly honor, that's going to take they're thrown off if something like that happens. Well, that uncle I met later on when I came to America, and when I came back, he settled in Baltimore, and he married a little Irish redhead. That aunt was redheaded and little, and he was a tall, blonde guy, and they had the prettiest children they have. They're still alive. And he always said that their happiest time married was the first year when he couldn't talk English and she could talk German. And their son, after this war was over and they were all so poor, the son of him is in a bank or something high in the bank. He went out there and gave a party to all their relatives. He had never, couldn't talk German or nothing, but my mother was still alive and she sent me pictures of it, my stepmother. So one of them came to America. The others all got married. Oh my gosh, they could start a whole club of all their relatives, so many children, and you know, they all got pretty old. Then this midwife, and then Marie was the youngest. She had about three children. Her name was Bertha, too, but no relation. And, my father used to say, when I was out there on a visit or something, don't talk about anybody. You're related with all of them. So that's funny.
What did they make in the factory where your father was the timekeeper?
It's a leather factory, and today it's one of the biggest of the world. They got hides, cow hides, and all kinds of, and they turned them into leather. That's what they did. I think they employ thousands of people today. They're so big. That little house where we lived, that's all gone, and I went back there one time just to see it.
Is there a place around it where they have cattle and stuff?
Oh, yes. You go further away from this guy. They all have cattle, you see. This South, they were. Not now. They're more industrialized. But my generation yet goes more to offices. But the generation back, every house had maybe four cows and two oxen. You needed the oxen to pull their wagons and the cows for milk and butter, and the people that were poor bought from them then.
No, I meant where did they get the skins from?
Well, the farmers from all over, they would send them even. Yeah, you see, there's not many places that they can dispose of them, and they get paid for it. If the skin is taken off without a cut, or if it's a cut in it, it's second class. See, I learned that from my father's small folk business that he went in later on, that they made kid gloves from. If that person that skinned that rabbit hurt that skin on the inside that makes the leather, then they only get half the price for it because they can't get the gloves out. That's the reason. And they build a couple of glove factories around there, send them all over the world. After Germany became Germany, and they were more able to do things, they industrialized, they had pretty good factories out there, big factories. And like I said, that Bosch Magneto, that what they produce is sold to every car, and the chemical factories, now that they're a cartel, they've been all together, but Germany has big portion of it around the Rhine there, and a lot of women are chemists and working there today. They had a battle till they tied the first. You
know. What's the first thing you remember about going to school?
Well, I got, just that year, my uncle came to Germany on a visit. They gave him that long off, and it was near spring. And he came to marry his childhood sweetheart or his school sweetheart. So there was a big, big wedding in our town. And he bought me my first, what do you write on first? Cheap slate, yeah. And he also bought me pencils and a box and what every child has in Europe, what something he, she she bears on her back and all the books and stuff, then they don't have it here that much, but the whole 7 years you have one of those Bunsen, it's called in German, and he bought me that, and oh, he told us lots of stories, and we had lots of treats, and all the relatives, the cousins' children, well, we children, we were put in a room by ourselves with the best things to eat, and when you go to a wedding, you get a little gift. We all got pretty handkerchiefs or a hair ribbon. That was a big thing in our life. And then when they went off together, they went down to Italy, back to America. And that's the aunt and uncle that had me come over there, over here later on. They had two children. They had a little Lily and Pauline and both that. And they had a third child, Louise. She was, when I went back to Germany, she was about a year and a half old. And about 8 years ago, I had her come over here. She was born in New York. She can come in any time. Pauline was born here, too. And she kept the English up. My aunt didn't speak much English, but the children among themselves kept the English up. And so she could get along pretty good. And her mother got married again and had children with that man. They're all dead now. And those children are here. One is the boss over all the Safeways. And somehow they work themselves because by nature they're hard workers. Oh, there's bad ones too in between. And when they always say all the Germans are clean and all the Germans are honest, I said not by far. They have jails like here. And there's plenty of dirty ones, too. You can't, you know, yes, divide people up a nation. Well, you asked me what happened to all the sisters and brothers.
Yes.
I think I took care of about
okay.
all of them, yes.
Okay. Well, what's the first thing you remember about school?
Oh, the school. My first teacher's name, they were all men, was Locher, L-O-C-H-E-R, and it's funny, I get letters from a Dr. Locher from Glendale, the same name, that has a beautiful church. I think it's never this, and I listen to them all the time, and sometimes I send for their cassettes, and I was surprised, and he wrote a little letter to me, and he said he knows Stuttgart real well. He had a student studies over there in the course of his, well anyway, his name was Locher, and he had an injured leg, he couldn't walk right, but he was the kindest teacher, and I was always second, you see, the smartest girl is first, then comes the second or third, but as I went on to school, and had that stepmother then, and especially when I gave up the Bible storytelling, I went down in the classroom. We were divided in four quarters, over 100 girls, and the boys were in another building entirely. And I became too naughty. I wasn't allowed to play at home. I had no free time, so I did it in school, and I was forever talking. So when I got to be in the third and fourth class, I wasn't such a good student anymore. I started out real good. So my father used to joke and said, Grandma made you just ready for heaven. Here you're not. You can't do much here. You know. Well, I made my livelihood and I was all right with what I learned. I was very good in arithmetic. And the girls that I didn't like, I was faster, so I could make a wrong answer and the right answer. And the girls that I didn't like, I showed the wrong. The devil when I think of it. And we were kept strict in school too. There was no homebook in the schoolroom. Outside you could, but you were so severely punished all over if you did bad things. But I liked my school years, and when I came to America, my uncle said, you don't need to go to school anymore, and I had a career by then, you know. And I was always sorry that he didn't make me go back to public school. All the education I got here was in night school, night classes. I most, whenever I had a chance, I did that.
How old were you when you started school?
7. In Germany?
Yeah.
7. You see, I was almost 14 when I came. I was just about through school. But we get, on the end of those 7 years, we get confirmed with whether if we're Catholic or Protestant or whatever. We get confirmed. So I had a separate confirmation before they let me go. And I got out of school maybe, I would have gotten the next spring, and I got out that August. I missed maybe 6 months. And then here, I remember in the Bronx, my uncle let me go to night school. And I never forget the first teacher I had in America. She taught us something. And I remember that all my life. And it was this: write your name in kindness, love, and mercy in the hearts of thousands, and you will never be forgotten. He was such a nice teacher compared to the German teacher with a stick in her hand. She was a blonde girl. I think she must have been 25 or 28 or something like that. A nice teacher. And because I was so poor in English, she took a lot of patience with me.
Was the school in Germany operated by the Lutheran Church, or?
No, they're operated by the state, and so are the churches. The pastors are hired like a teacher, and if they don't do right, they get fired. See, they're not depending on a congregation to keep them. That's a state position. That's quite a position, and they have their retirement and everything included in it. And they come to school, and every year, as many years I went to school, 1 hour in school is religion, and the minister comes and teaches that, because they're together with the state. And you don't know any. My father was against the church. He might have not been against true religion, but what they did with it, you see, they had a slogan in the Social Democratic Party, and they call it the 3 K's. The K stand for Kinder, lots of children, Kirche, the church, be in the church, and Küche, the woman in the kitchen. If they could, the socialists said if they can keep that up, then they have always Kitzler galore and have lots of soldiers to send out, and lots of few people get rich, and the others are all subdued. And that's why they didn't want to pay the school taxes and all that. And that's why they were called rebels. And they were sort of outcasts. Like 10, 20 years ago, or 30, when socialism and some communists here, they weren't liked either. Only they got better here. They got different organizations. The labor movement became stronger. And out there, it was more dangerous. Well, that's okay. The schooling I got. See, if I'd have stayed there, then you have to go 2 more years to an industrial school. That is, if you want to become a seamstress, or if you want to become some kind of worker's taught. My sister, for instance, she learned to be an office. She learned shorthand and typing, this half-sister. When you learn that, then right in connection with your school years, because you wouldn't get no job if you didn't to show. It's like a license for work, or a certificate, yes. And they're also organizing those things. You couldn't go different unless you left the country. That's why I never wanted to work in Germany. The conditions are terrible, and when I had my first job in France, and it was a big house and a lot of help, and because it was wartime then, when the war came, they had all their relatives in there. They said to me, "You sit for an hour, and I want to get up and do something. You sit for an hour, those Germans coming to spoil every house they ever work in. They're slaves, you see." We had an hour to eat, and they made me take that off. I couldn't go back to my children. And people live in Gloria, they know that. That's their resting time. And, oh, I thought France was wonderful. Every person at work gets 50 centimes for a bottle of wine. Wine grows so plentiful. And you're supposed to not be real healthy or strong if you don't drink wine. And so if it's a good cook in that house, you get from them 50 centimes a day, and she gives you the wine anyhow. Because they have so much to cook with, too. So Germany was a hot country to work. I used to be so feel sorry for the girls, for the maids, how they had to scrub everything underneath and how poor they gave them to eat and such poor pay. And I used to think, why did they stay here? You know, when I went back all the time, I had a chance to see that. In America, they didn't want you when they heard America. They didn't want you even as a nurse. They thought we were all terribly spoiled from America. I have to tell you this. I had one job in Germany after the First World War, and I was exchanged as an intern, you know, from France. I went to this Bauch family for their first grandson. The mother of the baby was the son of a Bauch, and they're in politics out there like they're here. And they had a beautiful apartment in Stuttgart, and they had one bathroom. And I said, when is it the best time for me to take a bath? She said, you go once a month to the Badeanstalt, to a public place where you take. I said, once a month? I said, I take a bath every day. In America, they would fire me if I was that dirty. Who needs a bath every day? We don't even take a bath every day, they said. But she finally let me take a bath once a week. I wouldn't have taken a job otherwise. I said, don't you want the person that holds your baby and says, to be clean? They couldn't imagine. I was invited to a house on my last visit to France, and the young ones happened to have a maid, and when we were sitting there drinking coffee, she knocked at the door, and they told her to come in, and she stood there, may I please take a bath this evening? Like a slave. I thought, oh boy. You know, it's so different. They can't do it to people in this country. In France, too, they have public bathing institutions where you can go first class, second class, third class. First class, you can get no powder and only one towel. I've been in them. All glass apart.
Okay. Did you say you went to school for 1 year in the with your father's mother's family in the Black Forest?
Yes, I was there one day. 1 year.
Was the school the same?
Only this was a country, small country school, where they had in one classroom different ages. We were over 100 children in Feuerbach, girls only, but this is sparsely populated, so they take a teacher, maybe take three classes, and teach them all, just have them sit a little bit apart. And it was nice there, though. It was a nice school, and I think I learned as much as I did in my own, as far as learning was concerned. We have to start in Germany, you have to start with reading. And alongside of it, when you're 7 and a half, they start you showing crochet work, and then knitting, and then you had to learn, sewing. Oh, a woman that can't make spatula and can't sew and can't make potato salad, she can't get married. What ideas?
Okay, let's recap. When your mother died, she went to live with your grandmother. And then you...
Wow. Mm-hmm. For a while.
Yeah. And then when your father got married again, you came
back. Yeah, and then he bought that restaurant, had that restaurant, and he needed me home.
Yeah.
You see, I was sent back then to my old school in Feuerbach. And
then he remarried and
had another daughter.
And then you came to the United States.
Before I was 14. I came the first time to the United States. And had to go back and not see, and I came in 1904, and I went back the first time in 1907.